All right, and welcome everyone.
Testing 1, 2.
This is Sundays after Sunday Afternoons Revolution Radio. I think my guest is having a little bit of trouble with his.
I think I got you.
Okay, you got
me now? Sorry about that.
All right, well, I was just starting the show, introducing the audience to Cancel the Cabal Sunday on Revolution Radio, and I'm also on Tesla Wolf Media. I'm Stephen Roberts, as I happen to mention, and today's guest is Scott Ricard. Scott is actually a, let me get his bio up here. Scott is a former American intelligence linguist and a veteran of the communications technology and national security industries. For over 3 decades, Scott worked as a national security and international service providers, software developers, product manufacturers, government, aerospace, and media organizations, and signals intelligence, or Signet. Welcome to the show, Scott. Welcome to Revolution Radio. Welcome to Tesla Wolf Media Paranoia TV.
Hey, thank you for having me, Steve.
You actually got to use one of their studio Skypes and the whole shot there, didn't you?
Yeah, I brought my laptop, so I'm on their I'm in their studio. This is Adrenaline Films. It's a studio south of Orlando, and I do a lot of television interviews out of here. I just got off of one with Press TV out of Tehran, discussing the current situation with Kobani and Turkey, NATO, and this fabricated mercenary force that they call ISIS.
ISIS, yeah. Well, that's a lot of the things I was hoping you would be able to discuss today also. I mean, I'm not, I don't want you to rewind the tape and do your
fine.
Whole interview, but a lot of people don't actually realize that ISIS or IS or ISL, whatever they're calling themselves nowadays, they're actually U.S. State Department and Pentagon and American interest funded.
Not only funded, but you also have guys that are embedded with the mercenaries. These guys have been, you know, trained in Jordan. These guys have been trained in and also in Saudi Arabia and Qatar, Turkey. You have folks, Chechnyans, that are very pro-Western, who will take orders from Western intelligence. And you have Western intelligence operatives that are, you know, basically operating within the group, you know, telling NATO and their coalition strike forces on who to take out. And they're basically taking out individuals that are, let's just say, the less cooperative ones, and the ones that are operating outside of their directives. This is not a group that is operating independently, and I think it's very unfair the way that they're being depicted in the news and talking about, oh, we just can't get ISIS, it's been a military failure. You know, that's what we see in the news. When this is not a failure, this is a success. This is what they wanted the mercenaries to do, to go take out the PKK that has been a nemesis to the Kurds in the Kurdish regional government, has been a nemesis to the Turkish government, has been at war with the Turkish government for 30 years, and now they have a mercenary force that's large enough and well-equipped enough to go fight them on Syrian soil coming from the south, because they've always been fighting them in the north in the Kurdish mountains. And this is the first time they've had a well-armed force to actually attack from the south. And standing by and watching is also Assad, because this group has also been an enemy of Assad. They've been trying to seek autonomy in the Al-Hasakah region and take over that region as making it their capital. And Kobani is by far one of the largest cities where they were bringing in weapons. The weapons were being brought in mostly through Italy with Israeli help. What people don't realize is the PKK has been massively helped by Israel and the Mossad for decades. A lot of Jewish Kurds that were pushed out of northern Iraq went into the mountains and joined the Kurdish PKK in order to fight the Iraqi Kurds who control the northern third of Iraq. And at the same time, they've been seeking their autonomy from Turkey. So this is a 30-year war that's being basically brought to a crescendo and peaking right now, with NATO cooperating alongside Turkey, using their built mercenary force to take out a 30-year enemy, and then basically having guys like Admiral John Kirby come into the news and saying, well, you know, it's just the best we can do. You know, it's been kind of, it's difficult to get everybody to work together. And, you know, when in fact, this is nothing like that. 15 years ago, NATO, which is 90% American, launched 38,000 combat missions, in Kosovo in 10 weeks. Here now, in less than 10 weeks, you've had less than 100 missions in Syria in 4 weeks. So it tells you that they're not putting any effort forward, and it's purposeful, and it's because they're basically putting on a show for the rest of the world to say, look, we just couldn't stop them, and unfortunately they were able to overrun Kobani, and obviously Turkey's sitting there watching because it's getting rid of an enemy that they've had to fight that has been basically running to Syria for its safety. And they've been using Kobani for quite some time. You know, Kobani's only about 200,000 population, but that's actually, you know, one of the more larger cities in Syria. So, you know, these are, you know, when we talk about the facts and the details, these are not the discussions. We don't have these kinds of reasonable discussions in the American news media. They just talk about how you should be afraid of it and how bad it is and how we really need to take care of it. And, oh my God, we're not able to do it. We're failing.
Right.
And, you know, it's incredible, propaganda. And this propaganda comes straight from the Pentagon and gets regurgitated, by the media, because obviously the media works on behalf of the State Department.
Certainly. The 100 sorties as compared to 3,800 sorties.
Yes. A week, by the way. And these 100 sorties were over 4 weeks.
Yeah. I guess that's supposed to, in the media and the Pentagon and the White House's eyes, that's supposed to justify sending troops back in, right?
Well, it's not really about sending troops back in at this point. It's about, you know, they have, you know, let's just be clear here. When they fought Milosevic, Milosevic had, you know, over, you know, hundreds of thousands of troops. And the territory was not as easy to track individuals as well, because there was, you know, we're comparing deserts to woods. And at the same time, these individuals are extremely easy to track in Syria, and it's and there's no aerial any kind of combat aerial or surface to air missile that the NATO or the coalition has to worry about. Where it was only about a week, maybe a week and a half, that scenario existed in Serbia and Kosovo, whereby the Milosevic's air force was really taken out in the first week, and the surface-to-air missile batteries were taken out in the first week. So the remaining 10 weeks of the bombing campaign were pretty much air superiority, very similar to what they've had from the beginning in Syria. So I think it's real important to understand that was 15 years ago, using technology that was 15 years old, and now they have much better technology to track, you know, the movement on the ground, and so they even have better intelligence, and they have far more capability. And most of the flights actually originated out of Italy when they were flying into Kosovo. So out of Turkey and out of Iraq, you know, it's a much closer battlefield environment. You know, to give you an idea, it's only 100 kilometers from Kobani to Raqqa, which is the headquarters for this mercenary force they're calling ISIL or ISIS. So it's a very small area and region that they have to operate in, and it's extremely easy for them to get the intelligence. They're talking about intelligence failures and so on and so forth. They always use the term failure, when in fact there's been very little failure. This is a very successful covert operation to take out the PKK. So I think it's very important to understand that when you talk about the details, and you get in any military analyst that takes a look at this and does true analysis of the actual effort that's been put forward, there's been extremely little effort put forward by the quote unquote coalition forces, when it's been incredibly more easy than Kosovo and Serbia was. So this has been a show for the Western world, and the only people who will be able to see through it are the people that look into the details and do true analysis of the facts.
Yeah, it seems true analysis of the facts are anything but the norm for the American government, the Pentagon, and other American interests. I would like, maybe you could explain for the three or four listeners out of 7.3 billion people on the planet that don't know what a false flag is or a problem reaction solution. Maybe share what that actually means and what is actually going on over there if in fact they are false flag agent provocateur attacks.
Well, a false flag typically is an incident. This is more of a scenario, a type of false flag, whereby the scenario that was originally created was created as a mercenary force, as far back as obviously the Iran-Iraq wars, as far back as the Afghan-Russian wars in the starting in the late 70s and early 80s. So these mercenary forces have been working together with Western intelligence groups and have expanded out into Chechnya. A lot of the Chechen forces that were operating with the Americans had to move into Turkey because obviously Chechnya is very pro-Russian now, but at the time in the early 90s, post the perestroika or the post the glasnost period, whereby the beginning of the color revolution started with Tbilisi and Georgia, they were looking at the Caspian Basin and the oil reserves there, and they were also looking at peeling off additional former Soviet states. And Chechnya was a failure, but a lot of the mercenaries that were trained in Chechnya, this was only in the 90s, still have senior managers and recruiters who bring in individuals who are still anti-Russian, and they're more willing to do the bidding of the mercenary forces that that are controlled by MI6, controlled by the CIA, controlled by Turkish intelligence, controlled by obviously Mossad intelligence is involved. And Mossad is playing both sides of the fence here. Mossad also aids and abets the PKK alongside of ISIS. And so Mossad is, obviously has a say in what happens in the Kurdish regional government. And for the first time, the Kurdish regional government has become a possibility in the northern Iraqi areas that have really given the ability of the West to put a sovereign state in that area. So from a false flag perspective, what we're seeing is a scenario whereby mercenary forces are being built by the West, funded by the West and their allies in the Persian Gulf. And as that becomes a force that they're using to apply pressure on individuals that are not cooperating, because they obviously applied pressure on Iraq, which was resulted in the removal of Maliki. Now they're applying pressure. They were applying a pressure on Assad, and Assad was extremely successful at thwarting Western efforts. Although it destroyed over 80% of the country, the only real standing city left is partially Aleppo and then mostly Damascus, which only about 10% of the population, 10 to 15% of the population lives in Damascus. And obviously you've had hundreds of thousands of refugees that have had to flee the country into Turkey, into Jordan, into Lebanon. So these types of scenarios, these false flags, this has evolved really over the last 3 to 4 years, but it's been under development since the early 2000s. The early 2000s individuals in the Bush administration were working diligently to create alignment with the al-Hasaka governorate, as well as the anti-Syrian movement. And this movement started in the early 2000s with the Bush. The current participants in this movement were very active in the early 2000s, pushing for relationships. And in fact, you know, kids that were in college in the early 2000s are now senior advisors to the Syrian National Coalition military that have been, and these college graduates that are former Syrians are basically working with the Pentagon to basically create the next defense forces for this Syrian National Coalition, which, by the way, is not national and is not collated at all. It represents less than 400,000 or 500,000 Syrians, and it's completely fabricated by Qatar and the United States, NATO, MI6, CIA. Turkey is also involved. So these are very fabricated scenarios that are all false flags that are fed in the news media to American people, but yet we don't know anything else because we don't have anywhere else to look for information, you know, other than unfortunately the internet. And the internet is not going to be used by individuals the same way I use it. I use it as an intelligence collection platform, and this is how I'm able to gather the information that I have and provide the actual facts and the truth and the statistics, because statistics don't lie. It's with statistics that we're able to have a competitive and a realistic and reasonable conversation and basically punch holes in the propaganda and the rhetoric that's being fed to us out of the State Department and the Pentagon.
Well, yeah, that's something we talked about last night was rhetoric. Semantics come to mind, and you know, just the regular old straw man attack. It seems that you get on one of these national news, these 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 365 news alleged networks. I say alleged news networks because they are just, to me,
they're just repetitive.
Yeah, they're just repetitive, and they just they have canned news stories that are fed to them by the White House and the Pentagon, and all they really have to do is read from their teleprompter.
Nobody's doing their own research.
They don't do work anymore.
That's correct.
A British man named David Icke, he characterizes these people as repeaters. They're That's not reporters are. Anymore. They get their news from, you know, whether it be the British Parliament or the Pentagon or the White House, and they just repeat it. But and if you buck their system and you go against their party line, you're nothing but a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, they would. I've been called that by the best of the propagandists that that pushed the. You know, I was telling you earlier when we spoke before the show, you had the one gentleman. His name is Jamie Dettmer. He's at the Daily Beast, which is a left wing, you know, obviously pro Democratic Party mouthpiece. And he's pushing the same rhetoric around, oh, it's just a failed military operation. These poor, unfortunate people are going to die because, you know, we haven't been effective enough. And nobody comes out and says that we are purposefully not being effective. And that's really what the facts are. You know, the statistics don't lie. You know, 15 years ago, we had far more capacity in a much more cooperative environment. Unfortunately, the Turks aren't cooperating. They didn't cooperate in either state. In fact, in Kosovo, the Turks were going to go in unilaterally, and that's what forced the U.S. to take the lead, because the Turks were threatening to go into Albania and go through Albania into Kosovo. They had actually destroyers off the coast of Albania, and this was one of the hottest scenarios that the U.S. has dealt with their NATO partner, which, by the way, Turkey was forced into NATO in the early 50s and has been a very reluctant partner. partner. And but at this point, there's been a lot of cooperation with Turkey, and they try to throw Turkey under the bus. They try to throw Saudi Arabia under the bus in the news and blame it. So it was Turkey that was causing this problems, helping to build ISIS, and it was Saudi Arabia and Qatar helping to build this problem. And then in the news, Erdogan will act like he's upset. Oh, I can't believe it. You know, they're throwing me under the bus for this. You know, and the fact is he doesn't come out and say, well, you're the ones that were asking me to do this. Well, you're the ones where we're sending the weapons to my guys to ship them in to do this. Oh, well, you were the ones that were training the people at the bases with your CIA guys in order to do this. So it's all an act. It's all a show. So I think it's very important to understand that, you know, what you see in the news is completely a kabuki theater.
Oh, sure. So certainly it is. They say, that we're just watching a movie whenever you turn the TV on, more or less. You're getting to see on the news what they want you to see and hear on the regular FM radio. They're just controlled as well as the AM radio, as terrestrial radio is what it's called. I think you were probably on terrestrial radio just a little while ago, weren't you, along with the TV or?
No, or I was on just Press TV out of Tehran. It's a television network.
Okay, they don't simulcast on radio or anything like that.
I don't think so. It's so funny because their network is predominantly in the West, is only accessible via internet because they are not allowed to broadcast across satellites. They've been actually censored in satellites across Europe, and Jon Stewart has put out another propaganda film that will probably, I think it will be released later this year, if not later this year, certainly early next year. It's called Rosewater, and it's a propaganda film put together by a Newsweek reporter that was incarcerated for participating in the Green Revolution in Iran. And he was also, he was a student of a university in Canada, and he went to go work for a Zionist film crew, and then his first job was working for Washington Post Newsweek, and he became sort of the head reporter for Newsweek, and he's written a book called And Then They Came for Me. And Jon Stewart directed a movie in Jordan last summer that basically said, this Rosewater, it's a story about this poor guy who was incarcerated and forced to make a confession because of his he wanted to be released. But in fact, what he confessed to and what the truth will find out, talk to the folks that actually filmed him in his confession. They have not shown all the footage. So there's a bunch more footage to show about this guy. And this guy easily confessed to the fact that he was working on behalf of Western media and obviously putting a spin on it that would be, anti-Iranian and pro-West. And that's, that was his job at Newsweek. I've read all of his articles. That's how he wrote most of his articles anyway.
Yeah. I remember I've seen this documentary twice, but I can't remember what the name of it is now. It's about the media, actually, and the entertainment system. It shows the history of the defamation of the religion of Islam. It goes back to the silent pictures when they started demonizing the Muslims, the Alibaba and the Seven Thieves or the 40 Thieves, whatever it was. It goes back to all of the rhetorical devices that they use in the last 110 years, 115 years, really, with the moving pictures and that, and television and so forth and so on. They actually had this plan probably back in the late 19th century to start to demonize. I believe it probably comes from the Albert Pike book, Morals of Dogma and something or another. But in that book, he wrote there was going to be three wars, and the final war was going to be with Islam.
Well, I can guarantee that you know, this has been an agenda for quite some time.
It has.
You know, you don't have to go very far. If you look at it was really newspapers were used mostly in the early 1900s and late 1800s. Once the advent of the typeset printer came out in the mid 1850s, those typeset printers allowed us to print up large amounts of newspapers much more cheaply. And those newspapers, as they were being distributed, if you were printing at the end of a telegraph, you know, your only avenue was what came down that telegraph line. So what your touch with the world was by far very well controlled out of New York City, because most of the information was being derived out of New York City. And some of the individuals that were involved, guys like Samuel Untermeyer and his father. His father was actually a lawyer who had invested in the printing and newspaper business. His son, Samuel Untermeyer Jr., was very close with William Randolph Hearst, was really close with guys like Edward Bernays.
Sure.
Edward Bernays is the father of what we'd call today's propaganda, wrote a book in the early 1900s called Propaganda.
And he was actually the nephew of Sigmund Freud.
Sigmund Freud's nephew. Without Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud would not be a household name in the United States. He was given, you know, basically 100% coverage in the newspapers and hailed as this amazing psychiatrist.
Yeah, amazing authority. Yeah.
And so that was spoon-fed to the American public and the world. And all of a sudden, you know, this obscure psychiatrist in Austria was basically saved from death, sure death, as part of World War I, and brought to the States by his nephew, became a household name. You can go into any room and mention Sigmund Freud, and you know, you're pretty much most of the people in the room are going to know who he is. But if you mentioned Edward Bernays, they wouldn't know who Edward Bernays was.
Probably not.
And Edward Bernays was the catalyst for not only the advent of Sigmund Freud, but also the advent of policies that were being pushed on the presidencies. Both Roosevelt and Wilson had Bernays as a confidant. He also was very instrumental in helping to promote the Federal Reserve and the benefits of the Federal Reserve, which was obviously a horrific decision for the United States. So this is the kind of manipulation that are at the roots of what we're talking about here. You take, for example, Walt Disney. Walt Disney got his start by making propaganda films that were anti-German, and there were cartoons that were being run in the film houses. And obviously, Walt Disney was incredibly successful at creating a fantasy that, people are more knowledgeable about than they are knowledgeable about the things we're discussing on this program. You know, the American society has taken the breads and circuses, or circuses and breads, from the Romans, created, I think it was right around 140 AD. And these particular, distractions, you know, we have sports, we have entertainment, we obviously have, the media industry when it comes to movies and
exactly,
those types of things.
Yeah.
And this is where people gain their mind share. And this mind share is, heavily influenced by a very small group of people that can make or break a movie,
yep.
Or make or break an actor, or make or break a writer or a producer or a director. And if you go against the grain and try to produce something that would be, let's say, controversial to the status quo, you're probably not going to get very many people helping you to get your product out on the media networks and into the movie theaters.
Yeah, exactly. You happened to mention going against the grain, and I did also a little while back, but I've heard that if you get into the press club there to talk to somebody like the president or the vice president or some top general, or even the press secretary, if you if you stray off course in the particular agenda and ask a question that goes against the grain, you're not let back into the press club for a while.
It's like what was the comedian that said it? He said, it's a club and you're not in it. George Carlin.
George Carlin, yes.
Yeah, and it is a club. And if you don't cooperate, you won't be in it.
Yeah. You also happened to mention John Stewart a little while ago. And I read a startling statistic that I think about a year or so ago that I believe in the demographic of 18 to 35 or 18 to 34 or whatever that demographic is, I believe it's something like 40% of that demographic gets their news from sources like Jay Leno,
John Stewart,
Stephen Colbert, and other comedians.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I think we talked about this, and maybe it was last night when we first met. I think the truth of the matter is that the average American watches 35 hours of television a week.
Yes.
And 80% of Americans get their news from television. So out of that 35 hours, we're talking about, you know, less than 10 to 15% that's news anyway. So, at that rate, getting 4 or 5 hours of news a week, and getting it from a comedic station, that explains everything. That is why you have a nation of individuals, where I refer to it as the Homer Simpson factor, because it is a very large, group of society that is highly, uninformed and, highly over-entertained and, has a very, a very narrow perspective on reality of geopolitical, military, and financial issues around the world. And, you know, they might understand their local community because they're working in their local community, and I commend them on being involved in local politics and local communities. But when it comes to national and international affairs, I think most people are a bit disabled by their bad habits.
Well, maybe not disabled, but misled by the so-called mainstream media, the corporate media.
Incredibly misled. I'm just saying that people realize, you know, some people have a learning disability and don't know it.
Sure.
Is where I was going with.
Sure.
And that learning disability are the bad habits that they become accustomed to because of the nature of the let's just call it culture. It's football is a culture.
Yeah.
You know, news media is a culture. You know, either you're watching CNN or you're watching Fox, or you're watching MSNBC or you're watching Fox. You know, there's not a whole lot of middle ground, and the mind share and the individuals that are hired into those positions are given those positions because they're predictable. They're predictable outcomes. Not that these people are doing it, from a, I guess, a nefarious perspective. They're doing it because they actually believe what they're saying. This is what they learned. This is what they knew. This is how they're portraying it. This is the concept of philosophical society that they've been accustomed to. So that's what they speak to. And that's, you know, because they speak like a Republican is because they're probably raised around Republicans, or they say met somebody along the way that helped them, you know, get somewhere and helped them do something and taught them something that they didn't know. And the same thing goes for the Democrats or the Independents or so on and so forth. You don't have a lot of people who have had a large amount of exposure and have a litany of information that allows them to, you know, draw conclusions on their own. They're basically regurgitating information they're hearing other places.
Well, certainly. Yeah, that brings up something I was going to mention. In today's age, for virtually $20 a month, somebody can have the internet, whether it's on a Wi-Fi or a cable or even on their phone, they can get internet. You know, their smartphones or the Blackberries or whatever. People can search and learn virtually anything that they want to on any subject.
Takes effort, though.
Yes, it does take effort. You have to turn off Honey Boo Boo or the football
game. That takes
no
effort.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's what we're up against. We're up against a tsunami of circuses and bread.
Yes, we are. Yeah. There's a word out there. I mean, it's pronounced ignorance, but There is also another variance of that pronunciation, and that would be ignorance. People are ignorant of a lot of things. That's just a foregone conclusion.
I have to admit that I'm ignorant of a lot of things. I'm interested in learning more.
That's right. Ignorance is really never meant to be a bad word. It's just taken badly. But people are choosing to be ignorant in this day and age.
They've made a choice. They'd rather entertain themselves. It's almost a form of self masturbation.
Sure.
If you ask me, it
really
is.
It's a choice.
And it's really sad because it's an addiction. It's a personal addiction to your entertainment side. And if you're not doing the things that you're normally used to doing, then you're not being satisfied. That particular itch is not being scratched. So I think when people start hearing these alternative, a few make the decision to say, hey, well, what this guy's saying, actually, there might be something to this.
Yes.
Even my own father, who unfortunately is a very loyal retired military gentleman, every once in a while he was saying, well, there is something to what you're saying.
Exactly.
But at the end of the day, he's watching his football.
And he's still looking outside the box.
He's still thinking inside the box with, Rachel Maddow. They still believe that Hillary Clinton's going to, come to the savior of the government and fix everything. So, that's the sad part about it, is that they're still, siphoning off the same gas tank.
Stuck in a matrix, more or less.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunate, but they didn't have the opportunity that our children will have, unless it goes away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the opportunity to have such broad access to information and to network with such a diverse group of individuals. These aren't communists. These aren't Marxists. I am neither communist, Marxist, anarchist, any of these words, or conspiracy theorist. These are individuals that now we can communicate more freely with, and we have an opportunity to say, hey, wait a second, what they're telling us doesn't make sense.
Right.
And that's really all I'm trying to do, is say, let's get together, let's build our own, communications networks, so that they cannot be censored, so that we can get on cable stations and on satellite stations and give people a real alternative. So my goal is to build a communications network that is uncensored, unfiltered, that will make the Young Turks network look like choir boys, which is probably one of the more reasonable networks out there. And before it was acquired by Al Jazeera, which, by the way, is a partnership with MI6, CIA, and Qatar, the Emir from Qatar. So here you have, three intelligence communities buying the most competitive American television cable network, and buying it for over three times what it's worth. And one of the benefactors is a former vice president, Al Gore.
And
how ironic is that?
Yeah.
That you have a president that builds, is part of a building what we think we need as a nation, a legitimate news network. And then as it becomes popular, it gets sold off to a small Arabic Qatari government that there's 200,000 people in the world that basically own one of the top five news agencies on the planet.
Yeah.
So that ought to tell you something. They're very plugged in with the Brits and the Americans.
And now they're just as controlled as the rest of them.
They're just a mouthpiece for the Arab world, for the West.
Yeah, the Western Arab world. Yeah.
And now and in the Arab world. In fact, when it first came out, and I got to tell you, they do some, I always say this, a broken clock is right twice a day.
Twice a day.
They do some great documentaries on Al Jazeera. So there are out of the, that 80-20 rule, not as much as 20%, but certainly, 2 to 5% of some of the material coming out of Al Jazeera is very useful. So I do follow all of the news networks because, there are people there that are working in the better interest of the truth. They're just not the people that are, directing the mind share of the network.
Yeah. How do you differentiate the spin on any network as towards trying to filter out the truth?
Well, you know, I base it upon, you know, a sort of an analysis that I learned when I was at NSA. You have to corroborate information, and corroborating means from multiple sources. It doesn't mean from multiple the same sources. So when you talk about AP, UPI, Reuters, Agence Presse-France, all of these traditional outlets, that's one source. Right. So that's only, you got to consider that a single source, because when one gets one, they repeat it out with the others. And then once it comes out in the newspapers, then it becomes the rhetoric that you're going to see on your television. And then it becomes, I would say, further manipulated by the television audience that they're serving. So it'll be spun, you know, from a right wing perspective when it gets on a right wing news station. It'll be spun from a left wing perception when it gets on a left wing news station. So what I do is I understand what I'm looking at, and I'm able to sort of you know, weed through the get through the weeds and then find out where the nuggets are, and then be able to corroborate that with third party reporting that's coming out of more independent news and more independent networks, and say, okay, here we've got something that's not controlled by this particular group or that particular group, and this one makes sense. And then you start using logic. You say, well, wait a second, none of these guys are making sense. Is anybody out there talking about this? And when nobody else out there is talking about this, then you have to be creative. You have to go in and have to basically look at what kind of information makes sense. Do the statistical analysis, do your own research, look at and compare things to other things, and then you can draw conclusions based upon facts of the past and facts of the present. And those facts of the past can be very telltale, because the past does, if you don't understand the past, you will never understand the present.
Yeah, that's what I tell people myself whenever they ask me. I do have a degree in mass communications, an associate's degree. And I tell them virtually the same thing. I look for the left hand or the right hand spin in a story, and then I just check how many, you know, variable sources there are, and check if the resources are valid or not. That's the way I was taught in journalism school.
Yeah. Like if you get something out of, let's say, Democracy Now! Or NPR or Voice of America, they're all Pentagon mouthpieces.
Funded.
And the Pentagon, government funded. And when you see that, you know, that's going to be what I'll call the soft core left and the soft core right. And then it gets picked up by the news agencies and becomes more hardcore, depending on, you know, which news agency is picking it up. It goes left or right. And they'll put curveballs on things that don't exist. So, you know, you put a little spit on it and throw it at you. So that's the problem, is that, you know, once by the time, you know, you're getting it, it started out as State Department propaganda, and then it gets spun left and right by the time you get it.
Give them a little Gaylord Perry there, right?
Yeah.
I'm going back showing my age there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what about Mark the Bird Fidrich?
Mark Fidrich, that's right. Scuff that ball up.
I like that guy. He was, yeah. He, you know, he only had one good season. They threw his arm out.
He did, yeah. Yeah.
He basically he threw so many games. I mean, he got Rookie of the Year that year too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he was one of the better pitchers that Detroit had, and they used him too much.
Yes, absolutely did. But going off on a different.
Sorry about that.
No, we're just going off on a different rabbit trail there.
Yeah, well, there I was, you know, paying attention to that kind of stuff as a kid.
Yes, I was too.
You know, I could tell you who was on every baseball team, football team.
I could too. I
mean, and now I unfortunately that does not occupy my mind. I wish I could. I wish I could trust my government. I wish I could trust these guys. But now I'm like a watchdog.
Yeah.
And I can call it. And my friends in the intelligence community, they say you're treading on thin ice. You shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
You know, you're risking it. What do you got? Some kind of death wish? You know.
Yep.
So so that tells me that I'm on the right track. And a lot of the guys won't even talk to me anymore. I've been outcasted because, you know, they've probably been told, you know, do you want to keep your security clearance? He's not the kind of guy you want to talk to.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. You know, I'm 50. I've lived longer than some and not as long as others, but, you know, the day I die is going to be the day I die. If it happens, it happens. I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing. I don't have a death wish or anything, but, you know, it's going to happen when it happens. And, I don't fear anyone. I guess maybe I'm a little bit wrong up in the head or
something. I welcome the FBI and the CIA or anybody to come to my house, and I'd be happy to make coffee for them as long as they're willing to stay.
Yeah.
I mean, God help, though. They better send somebody that's seasoned, because they send a young guy. The young guy is going to be like, I'm missing Monday Night Football for this.
Yes. Yeah. God, I could be at the bar looking at girls. Yeah.
And that's all I thought about in my 20s. I got to tell you. So, I mean, most, even with the access to information that I had and the kind of opinions that I had in the mid to late 80s, it really took me until probably the 2000s to start saying, wait a second.
Something's wrong. Huh?
Something's really wrong here. And by the way, I can start talking to people about this. I mean, even when I came down to work Patrick Air Force Base in Cape Canaveral with Computer Science Corporation and Raytheon, I was not really that privileged to be able to speak to people about what it is that I saw when I worked at the agency and in the Air Force intelligence side, because first of all, nobody was really interested. And secondly, you know, I didn't think there was that much wrong with the country at the time. I was not that, you know, aware of all the things that we were doing. And then when I, you know, when the Gulf War broke out in the early 90s, I was like, you know, I kind of thought, well, you know, Saddam was our guy. And, you know, we gave him the opportunity. We told him that he could go in and attack Kuwait. But yet now we're against him. And, you know, this is a guy that we gave mustard gas to kill the Kurds. This is a guy that we gave, you know, weapons to kill the Iranians. I said, this is not right. I said, and then I knew something was wrong, but it still, I was not, you know, there was no avenue. There was no social networking. You know, I wasn't going to start a radio show. You know, it wouldn't have been as safe as it is now, because there's so many more of us. It's almost as if the ants have like overtaken the kitchen. Now. And, because we have the ability to communicate more effectively, it's a lot safer, and there's a lot more opportunity for us to talk to each other than there was, you know, even 15 years ago, in the early 2000s before the advent. Cause you have to think about this, you know, the internet, you know, I was in meetings with, Fortune 50 companies in the early 2000 timeframe. Late 90s, I should say, late 90s, probably around 96, 97, who said that they'd never use the internet for financial transactions because it'll never be secure.
Sure.
And that was only 17 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe 16, 17 years ago. So these individuals were very clear about the fact that the internet would never be used for financial transactions because it was too insecure. Well, obviously, I felt that they were wrong, and I was proposing some solutions, and those solutions ended up being implemented. But that was the scenario that I was dealing in. I was dealing in deploying, you know, next generation technology, and I was involved in that. I was immersed in it, and I would see things in the news just like people see things in the news today. And I would never get any deeper because there was really no access. You know, you had Yahoo breaking out, and then you had the internet becoming more useful. But that as people had the ability to communicate more effectively than, say, list servers, and things like voice over IP and what we're doing today with video over IP, you know, this is an opportunity to get out and have a different discussion and have, you know, voices, many different voices, speaking with each other and sharing information that, you know, I learned from people that, you know, I learned many things from you yesterday just talking with you. So, you know, we can all learn from each other, and the ability to learn is obviously communicating outside of channels that they've, you know, made available to us very, very simply. It's takes a little effort, but I'm hoping to make that easier to try to get on the satellite and get on the cable networks.
Yeah.
And also, you know, bring individuals like yourself and give you a better platform, because I mentioned to this yesterday when we spoke, is I learn more about, you know, good journalists and good broadcasters and good activists. I learn more about individuals like you from the network that we've been able to establish in these social network environments, mostly in Facebook for me, but also in Twitter for others. But at the same time, I also learn more by getting involved in shows like this, because in shows like this, you might bring on a guest that I've never heard of, and I learn about that guest by listening to your show or being on that on a show with you with that particular individual, and then I go and I provide myself additional information, and obviously that takes effort because I'm not just hitting that button that I'm used to hitting and going to that channel that I'm used to, you know, basically, you know, intravenously subduing myself on. So yeah. I think it's like I said, it's a cultural difference. It is changing slowly, but I can see that the network is growing and it is becoming a frustration to the individuals that know that there is an alternative voice out there that is, it's not huge, but yes, it is not diminishing.
No, it isn't. We just got about a minute or two here left. Maybe you could like to plug a website or plug you or something.
Well, I'd rather you plug yourself. You know, you've got a lot more experience at this than I do. I'm more of a participant. I'm hoping to work, you know, with you and others you know, my Facebook page is, you know, Scott Rickard. It's Facebook.com/ScottRickard4. That's the best place to get a hold of me. But at the end of the day, the best thing to do is get out and find out as much as you can. Get off, you know, shut your TVs and stop ordering the newspaper and get on the internet and find the right information.
That's right. Networking is the answer. And that's my music there, Scott. So, Scott Rickard.
That's fine.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
And I will be talking to you very soon here. All right, everyone. We'll be right back.